Another one, plate 3, engine 2, ladder 1, squad 3, medic 211, chief 6, battalion 3, air truck, rescue trailer, delta response, building collapse, 601 Providence Road South, University Village Apartment, apartment 707, city fire jurisdiction, crossroads of Turner Avenue and Stewart Road, timeout 446, KTJ 485, WQSL 552.
Control to you, engine 3 is on scene. We got a single-story, single-family. We got a detached garage fully involved in the back. We're going to be stretching a line. Get a water supply in the back of the front.
Battalion 2 is on scene in Silver Command. We got a good fire with a forcible entry problem. We also got a critical exposure to the south. Gonna need help with the first line and an exposure line. He was in charge.
Engine 4, 5, 11. Engine 2 for the fast team. Truck 6, 1. Rescue 1, car 1, ALS 1. Delta response. 24 Country Club Drive, Hilltop Apartment. Building 23. First structure fire. Front Street, Tac 5.
Engine 4 to fire alarm. Got a working fire. Got about a quarter of the building fully engulfed.
Working fire. A quarter of the building fully engulfed.
Mikey, that's a new building in construction.
Yeah, it's the other side, Chief. I'm going to be at the rear of the building, fire end. I'm advancing an engine 3 portal line.
Is the building vacant, Mike?
This is an occupied building. People are still evacuating the building right now.
On your street, in your city, across the country, and around the world. Taking it to the streets is all about fireground leadership and advancing operational excellence on today's demanding fireground. With straightforward street-level talk, with intelligent, stimulating, and provocative insights and dynamic discussion, and interactive dialogue with leading national and international fire service leaders and guests on important issues affecting the American fire service with applications internationally within the tradition and brotherhood of the fire service. So, grab a cup of coffee and sit down for this edition of Buildings on Fires, Taking It to the Streets. And now, here's your host, Christopher Naum.
On your street, in your city, across the country, and around the world. Taking It to the Streets is a monthly radio talk show program on fireengineering.com, Blog Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Christopher Naum. Again, as always, a heartfelt welcome to our dedicated, loyal program listeners and to our ever-expanding following from our newest live listeners and those of you that are downloading and listening to our program on your media devices. Taking It to the Streets, it's all about advancing operational excellence, decisive engagement for the fire service, and our continuing dialogue and discussion. So again, welcome to this edition as we move into the new year, 2023. I want to thank all of you for taking time out in your schedules, whether you're listening live. We are live currently right now. If you're listening to us around the country currently or around the world, for that matter. We are live and transmitting here from our headquarters in upstate New York, and for those of you that are listening in on a downloaded version of our program, again, I want to thank you wherever you are and whatever you may be doing in the course of that activity. I do want to take a very brief moment here just to continue to express both my personal as well as the fire service's profound sense of loss with the untimely passing recently of our beloved chief editor, leader. Chief Bobby Hall passed away unexpectedly recently, last month, and his private family activities and memorial took place today in Oklahoma. And I certainly want to extend my personal thoughts, my family's prayers to Chief Halton's family and to the entire fire engineering family that we all know all too well, from the editorial advisors, the contributing editors, all of the staff at Fire Engineering, and to all of us that have known Bobby and Chief Halton directly or indirectly, either through his writings and his readings that we've taken part of, or have seen and worked with him directly at FDIC, or have had the opportunity to listen to him in many of his conferences and program presentations across the United States over 20-plus years, and certainly our opportunities here online on Fire Engineering, Blog Talk Radio, and again, through his writings, his commentary, his monthly editorials, and all of the other things that Chief Halton, Bobby, as affectionately as we call him, was so well known. So, again, just my profound thanks to Chief Halton for everything that he provided me, both officially and unofficially. A lot of conversations over many, many years, and it all goes back to a very simple. This is, again, I'll share just one little simple story here about that many of us have. This was way before Chief Halton got involved with Fire Engineering and Penwell at the time, Fire Engineering Magazine, but I had the opportunity to meet Chief Halton when he was a company officer at the NFA, at the National Fire Academy, many, many years ago. We were both students. I was wearing an FDNY sweatshirt at the time, and we were in the dining hall, and he had an opportunity to come up to me as being a native New Yorker. He says, "Hey, are you on the job?" I said, "No." You know, I told him where I was from and so forth, and we struck up a conversation at the time, and we often talked about that first meeting that we really didn't know either one of us at the time, but certainly that became the starting point of many, many years' worth of conversations and collaborations and as such. So just my word of thanks to Chief Halton, and again, thoughts and prayers to the entire family and to everyone affiliated directly or indirectly with Fire Engineering, and certainly the Clarion Fire Rescue Group, and certainly the Penwell family that were the predecessors to the current oversight and management of the magazine and the affiliate activities of FDIC and Fire Engineering. So just a quick word to that account. With that being said, our program tonight on this edition of Buildings on Fire Taking the Streets is a conversation on what we have coined the term on fireground architecture. It's talking well beyond just the basics of building construction, but something that I wanted to introduce to everyone. And those of you that have been following our podcasts over the last number of years or have had the opportunity to sit in on any one of my programs, either at FDIC or at any one of numerous regional and national presentations across the United States, you've heard me talk about the five-star command model and talk about the predecessors and the precursors to what we are now coining here as we move well into 2023, with some things that really became very well-rooted in the latter part of 2021 and extended into 2022, where we really were able to start fine-tuning this model and this concept that I truly believe is such a critical element, a fundamental element, if not a domain, within the job in the fire service. We talk about doing the job of firefighting, dealing with the built environment, and that's really part of the theme of our program here. It's really talking about fireground architecture, the importance of construction literacy, and by that we just talk about having a profound level of understanding, comprehension, critical thinking to be able to evaluate and identify and then to engage on today's fire ground, when we talk about structural firefighting, and how today's fire ground, as we are going to lead into, has tremendous challenges unlike yesterday's fire ground, and we'll, again, help define that. But, again, some perspectives on the study of building construction, building sciences, and just a little bit of an introduction to some different aspects of fire ground architectural, the modeling. You'll hear me talk about some different components that, for many of you that, again, have been following very deliberately and diligently our teachings, our lectures, our writings, and so forth, it'll continue to make more sense. And I wanted to take this opportunity for this particular podcast, again, being very early in the year, our first podcast for 2023, being here in the early part of January, it was a very opportune time to sort of refocus, take into account some of the things that we did speak about over the course of the latter half of last year, our previous episodes that are archived on the Blog Talk radio format on fireengineering.com. If you go into the Blog Talk podcast segment online, you will find the archives, and then from the archives you can do a search and find certainly some of our direct Taking It to the Streets programs. But I also would point out that I've had the opportunity through our collaborative efforts with my other very strong colleagues, with Chief Doug Klein, with Chief Danny Sheraton, two individuals that we sort of collaborate much more frequently, but having been on their podcast programs also, we continue to elaborate on different discussion points, and we talked about many of the elements here that we are going to, again, touch upon within the context of our program on this particular episode. I would certainly be remiss if I did not make mention of. So first of all, again, if you're not following us on both Facebook and on social media, on both Facebook, on Twitter, we are at Command Safety on Twitter. It's also at Buildings on Fire, and then also on Facebook, my personal Facebook page, and then as well as our Buildings on Fire Facebook page. If you're not following us, again, there's a tremendous degree of wealth of information that we continue to populate and publish to promote, again, lessons and learnings from the fire ground, reading the buildings, talking about the built environment, construction, operation, size up, different insights on building performance, predictability, and so forth. So I would, again, encourage you to follow us along with a number of other individuals who are continuing to promote and advance building sciences with good, accurate, timely, and I cannot stress enough about accurate information that is available to you online. I will also state that we are working very deliberately and diligently to try to get our websites up and operational. We have been sort of off the grid for about 18 months now with the sunsetting of our previous firegroundleadership.com page, our thefireofficer.com, commandsafety.com, thecompanyofficer.com. These were all hosted on the fireengineering.com Fire EMS blog site for many, many years, going on 12 years until, again, through the transition with Clarion, there was a decision made to sunset and sort of end the run of those blog sites. And we did not transition over to a new platform at the time as we were going through really the thought process to really give a more integrated and rich opportunity to integrate some different segments of our social media and blog sites and websites. Buildingsonfire.com currently still is active. It's still an active site if you were to go on to that site. It is sparse and has not been populated for an extended period of time. Right now it's sort of a placekeeper, but I will indicate that we are working towards, as we have been throughout the majority of last year, to integrate our buildingsonfire.com footprint and to extend that into a number of different opportunities that continue to dovetail in with much of the rich availability of information that's available on the fireengineering.com website, as well as the other support elements that are provided through fireengineering.com, both the print as well as the online information that's available. But again, we are looking to dovetail into that with our integrated buildingsonfire.com portal. And then from there, you will be able to go into the separate sections dealing with fire ground leadership. We have a new one called Reading the Buildings, all dealing with building anatomy and size up and construction, a very extensive library of references and research. There will be downloadable media pages for you to be able to download if you're searching for particular slides on construction. We have over a million individual media sections or slides and information and images and so forth, all JPEG and other types of diagrams and information. But we have over a million individual downloadable resources that will be available for everything to do with construction and the built environment and firefighting and tactics and so forth, along with our upcoming integrated programs on the company officer, the battalionchief.com, and a couple of other different segments. We're going to have a couple of other things that will, again, continue to help drive the continued efforts to increase what we call both building and fire ground literacy. So those things will be coming up in the not too distant standpoint. And I guess since I'm on a roll, I'll talk about a couple other things before we get into our program here, since I'm taking a little bit of our time up front. We do have a monograph series that we are working on. These are going to be small, short book format, so about 100 pages in length, but all very specific to a very particular topical area dealing with building construction, specific topic. But again, it's going to be upwards of about 100 pages of just some very concerted, concentrated, as the term monograph indicates, a very focused opportunity to get some information out there. And these will be a continuing series. So our intent here is to create a significant number of individual books that are part of this series on a variety of topical areas. Our first three programs that we have coming out, actually four books that are going to be coming out that we are currently working on, a monograph series on an introduction to mega mansions or McMansions, since it's a hot topic. Another one on Main Street Type 3 construction, some insights again on building construction dealing with Type 3 Main Street insights. That, again, will be a concentrated effort to provide that level of insight. And the third one will be on small footprint commercial buildings. And the fourth, or actually the leading book, will be just an introduction to fireground architecture, the concepts of building performance, predictability performance, some of the things that we are talking about here today, and really a primer. The kinds of information you cannot find to the extent that is necessary to cover the topical area in any particular textbook that is currently on the market or any book that is forthcoming. You will be, I can assure you, you will find these reference books to be timely and informative and will really fill in the gap between what's available out there through the conventional textbooks and being able to update these monograph series on an as-needed basis. As new information, as lessons and learnings come about, we will be able to get into the publishing side of it, update those immediately, and come out with additional versions almost immediately as the need arises. And then lastly, for those of you that, again, may have an interest and have sort of sat on the fence for a number of years, we are, again, we do have a scheduled New York City a New York City street tour with Chief Danny Sheraton and I. This will be a Reading the Buildings tour starting in Midtown Manhattan and ending in Lower Manhattan. It is a 8 to 10-hour walking tour, looking at buildings, understanding construction, identifying different features of buildings, everything from the brownstones to the tenement to the commercial, from Times Square to the Hudson Yards, to high-rise to low-rise, and also taking a look at some very specific site, going to the Watch Street fire location, going to the 23rd Street fire location, talking about history. We're going to have an opportunity to go to and have lunch at a local deli or a pizza joint. We'll also have a tour of the FDNY Fire Museum, starting off at the FDNY Fire Zone in Midtown. But, again, it's a phenomenal opportunity. We do have limited seating available, registrations available online. Take a look at our postings on our social media, both on Facebook, on Twitter, on our other social media pages, or if all else fails, just quickly DM me directly and I'll give you the information. But it is on Saturday, March 11th. It's a full-day session. It is very cost-effective, and it's certainly something not to be missed. We do have a couple of other tours scheduled into 2023, but this will be our kickoff here on March 11th. Certainly not to be missed. We're going to schedule out a walking tour in the Bronx, another one in Brooklyn, and a couple more in the Manhattan areas of Midtown going down to Ground Zero and so forth. So, again, if you're looking for more information, some stuff's online, and, again, DM me directly if you're interested in getting some more information. So with that being said, again, I don't want to belabor that aspect. We are live. I'm just going to ask you if you're interested in calling in. Our call-in guest number is area code 760-454-8852. 760 area code 454-8852. We will be opening up the call-in lines in about 30 or 40 minutes. I want to get into some of the discussion points. I want to do some presentation here. I've actually probably got about 4 hours worth of material here. This sort of is a mini workshop type program versus being a podcast. But I've got a lot of notes here in front of us in preparation for our conversation. But again, we will sort of selectively pick and choose where we want to go in the context of our program. And again, I'll just ask you to hold off on any call-ins until we get a little bit further into the program, just so I can at least get some of the content out that I'd like to definitely put into the context of our program here for our listeners as we, again, try to talk about what is fireground architecture? Why is that a different study? Why are we not studying building construction and building sciences to the extent that we should be in any of our jurisdictions? I don't care if you're running 100 calls a year or your company and your house is running 1,000 or more calls a year. The importance of understanding that first do, whether it's the four corners with one stoplight and the 15 or 20 buildings that comprise your particular response area, or it's that the couple of thousands of buildings that are part of your first do with a heavy concentration of population and a variety of different building types, occupancy types, occupants of your risk. There is a need, a tremendous degree of need, profound degree of need, a requirement for all of you, whether it be the newest probationary firefighter all the way up to the seasoned, experienced commanding officer and our company officers in between, to have a much greater degree of knowledge and appreciation of our built environment than what we currently are either stressing and teaching, both in terms of the formality of our classroom sessions, as well as the kinds of in-service classes that one may obtain, or even the types of programs that are being provided that many of you are conducting in quarters as part of your captain's drills or company officer drills or in-service activities, or your training drill nights that for some of you, again, volunteer, combination, or career, from metro to the small size organizations, we are not investing enough time, nor are we accurately obtaining technically accurate, timely, and expanded insights on construction versus regurgitating and relearning or revisiting the same type of information that unfortunately many of our textbooks continue to put out, to publish, and with very little change other than, and again, I preface this, is that other than some of the kinds of updates that we typically have, the updates on mass timber construction, the updates on fire behavior, the updates on continuing updates dealing with, again, the newest issue dealing with lightweight construction, and again, just, but never going nearly far enough. So we want to take advantage of that aspect here to really get into our dialogue and discussion. One of the other things that before I get into our formality of our program, we're live right now here on January 5th, our session and our program is being published online here as we talk about being transmitted, communicated on the 5th of January of 2023. And this date, as well as the upcoming date of January 6th, have some significant importance to a great degree when we talk about our lessons from the fire ground. And we've been promoting and talking about lessons and learnings from the fire ground for about 15 to 18 years. We first coined the term lessons and learnings from the fire ground as part of a FDIC program. We actually talked about lessons and learning in our online blog posts on fireengineering.com. Fire EMS blog sites, both on our original commandsafety.com and then extending into our firegroundleadership.com. But we talked about lessons and learnings from the fire ground before anybody else was talking about them. And there are three particular events that we've posted on our social media. And again, I would encourage you to take a look at those postings on my specific Facebook page. If you go to Christopher Naum on Facebook, you'll find those items. Lessons and learnings, honor, courage, dedication, fortitude, sacrifice, remembrance. Again, we want to remember Lieutenant Matt Letourneau, who was posthumously promoted to captain as a result of his line of duty. Lieutenant Matt Letourneau was a lieutenant on Engine 45 in the city of Philadelphia and lost his life on January 6th. Of 2018 at the 2240 North Colorado Street Fire, row house occupancy. Our online insights, again, makes reference to two specific reports, the NIOSH report, which, again, is extensive, along with the Philadelphia Fire Department After Action report that was published. I had the opportunity to work on both of those reports, one for the Philadelphia Fire Department, and the second report, which was for the NIOSH Firefighter Line of Duty Death Report. So, again, both of those reports are extensive, especially coming on the heels of the most recent after-action report from the city of Baltimore and the report for the triple line of duty death. And, again, just some things that, again, we're going to be coming up on that anniversary here in a very short time frame. It's hard to fathom that, again, an entire year, 12 months have gone by since that particular event. But, again, a lot of insights on row houses and also some downloadable links to our three-part series that we had here on Fire Engineering blogtalkradio.com, dealing with the NIOSH reports, talking about, again, insights on row house operations. We had a three-part series in that podcast talking about the NIOSH reports, lessons, learnings. We talked about the building, fire ops, and then we talked about recommendations and taking actions. Those are just as important as they were when we first published those back in 2020 as they are here today, again, as a result of the most recent learnings coming out of the city of Baltimore. And again, the discussions, if you have not had an opportunity to download that particular report, I would really stress for you to take a look at the insights and the findings from that particular report. And again, when we talk about the events that surrounded the South Stricter Street fire in Baltimore City, I can't stress enough, guys, that, again, it all goes back to just understanding so much about our construction, our built environment, and even in those types of buildings that we have continuous reoccurrence of fires and responses and works in the streets and so forth, there's insights, there's lessons and learnings and understandings that sometimes we have to slow down a little bit. We've got to dig into the books. We've got to get our personnel out into the streets. You've got to look at the buildings with a degree of technical knowledge. It's not just always falling back on what levels of experience we've had, anecdotal information. It does extend into a greater degree of technical knowledge that's drawn out of both fire service as well as non-fire service related technical books. It's also having the ability to partake of insights provided by those that are on the job within the fire service, and then as well as the external experts. And again, there are experts out there and subject matter experts that have a profound degree of technical competencies in these areas and can give us what we need in terms of a firm understanding and on what we already know. But I also stress that sometimes there is far too much more of what we don't know than it is what we know, and unfortunately, we don't know it. Again, how do I know what I don't know if I don't know it? And that's really all part of that aspect. So I talked about the Letourneau event in the city of Philadelphia. The other lessons and learnings, again, for those of you that have never heard of this event, especially if you've been on the job, volunteer career in a shorter period of time, the January 5th, 1995, Seattle, Washington fire, the Mary Pang fire. Again, when we talk about the fire that occurred in the Mary Pang food products plant that was on South Dearborn Street in the Monard Avenue south area of Seattle, this fire, again, resulted in a triple line of duty death of three firefighters. And again, the U.S. Fire Administration download the PDF, the lessons and learnings that come out of that report. We've provided a link along with some additional insights on buildings of Type 3, Type 4 construction. Again, a significant event that occurred in 1995. And then lastly, we made reference to another event that occurred in the city of Chicago relative to a bowstring truss roof collapse in which three firefighters were killed in what was called the Forum Cafeteria Fire. That occurred on January 6th of 1973. So three significant lessons and learnings, three historical reports, three historical events in which, again, we have firefighters that have lost their lives dealing with specific types of buildings, different types of building components, all under fire conditions, all of which, again, we are engaged in aggressive operations and engagements on the fire ground, in, around, on top, next buildings that resulted in unfavorable conditions that led to multiple line of duty deaths. Again, two which were multiple line of duty deaths, three firefighters in Chicago, three firefighter LODDs in Seattle, and the single Lieutenant Matt Letourneau's death in the city of Philadelphia. So, again, these are our lessons. These are our learnings where we're going to get that information. So, again, I just want to make quick mention of that. And with that, let's get into our program. So when we talk about today's environment, we talk about today's evolving built environment and today's evolving fire ground. It's an evolving built environment and a demanding fire ground. And again, we talk about the evolving nature of our built environment. It continues to evolve at such a fast pace. Some of you are seeing this firsthand with a whole variety of different types of hybrid and new construction or different types of occupancies, different types of materials that are being introduced, going up at a quicker pace, utilizing a variety of different components and materials, all built with different types of principles and practices, and we talk about the building sciences, all of which are going to react in it with sometimes an unpredictable as well as a predictable manner. We talk about fire behavioral travel, but more often than not, guys, it's the degree of unpredictability that demands of us to have a greater degree of insight, building intel, pre-incident knowledge of the construction, the materials, the methods, how these buildings are going up, the inherent conditions that one may find themselves with inheriting based upon how these buildings are constructed, and suddenly they're occupied, or they're occupied, they go vacant, they go through renovations, and guess what? They come back to life with a different occupancy, with maybe a whole different occupancy risk profile to them. Historically, when we take a look at the legacy, the context, again, our built environment, it's comprehensive in scope. It's everything from simple to high-tech. Complex, there are various types of domains, functions, there's layers, and yes, at times they can become very overwhelming. Construction and the frequency of construction, or it's pretty simple, right? For some of you, you have pretty straightforward, some almost to the point of being static types of response areas, and I always talk about that first do as being that easily manageable kind of geographical footprint. When we talk about that first do, for some of you, your first do is your entire city, right? If you're a volunteer department and you're you're protecting a particular geographical area, your first due with that single station, with your complement of companies and personnel, is that entire boundary, political sort of geographical boundary that is your first due. But when we talk about the first due, it's typically of some type of a geographical footprint which has a certain amount of coverage, whether it be in square miles, typically when we talk about that. But when we talk about that, it can be pretty simple, and it can be very static, or it may be very dynamic with a lot of continuing changes that may be overwhelming when we talk about getting in there, pre-fire planning and keeping abreast of construction and so forth. I will say this, that when we talk about our built environment, the built environment is developing faster, with greater complexity, with greater hazards and risks, than to firefighters and to our companies, than the tactical models are providing for. We are starting to see some insights that are coming about. I would say that one of those sets of insights, these are derived out of the most recent newest standard, the NFPA 1700 standard, is attempting to try to tie in the aspects of what we are gaining insights on from science and R&D. We talk about insights from the variety of different individual or collective test studies and reports that are out there. We're connecting the dots, and we're painting a picture. We're attempting with appropriate balance to identify attributes and conditions based upon, if we talk about the fire dynamics within a building, how fire dynamics are affecting our standard understanding of construction, which unfortunately I would say is somewhat miscued and also may not be entirely looked at in the appropriate manner, because we continue to look at our built environment. We continue to take a look at buildings with a set of standards that I truly believe are antiquated, have not kept up with, nor have they expanded in the kinds of narrative and discussions and descriptors that we can identify with when we talk about certain buildings. And by that I'm saying that if I'm talking about a commercial occupancy, well, there's a lot to be said about the commercial occupancy building's anatomy, the structural elements of that building, the footprint, the physical elements of the size, the footprint, the square footage, the volume of that structure, along with the construction, the materials, the methods, when it was built, the era and vintage. We've been talking about era and vintage well before many of some of our current colleagues have been talking about that, and it actually goes back to the late 1990s, almost to 1999, when I first identified and conceived this aspect of era and vintage of both construction and materials, how buildings were built in certain eras of time that are associated with a vintage of buildings that go well beyond the conventional types 1 through 5 of construction, that there is this predictability if we look at some fundamental elements. And I want to expand upon that as we get into this dialogue and discussion here that is really the formulative basis. So as I mentioned, the built environment is developing faster with greater complexity, greater hazards and risks to firefighters, to our companies, and the tactical models are providing for. But we are trying to, again, make sense of all of this. But fundamentally, it goes back to the built environment. We talk about the built environment. What is it? It's all about building construction, right? And it sometimes, and again, when we talk about building construction as it relates to the fire service, and when we even use the term building construction for the fire service, that aspect, that those terms, those collections of words were first put together in 1971 by Francis L. Brannigan, who wrote the first book, and actually it was not the first book, but it was really the first guide to building construction specific to the fire service, talking about building construction, the building sciences, talking about initial aspects of how buildings and construction in various types of occupancies are affected by fire. Pretty simple concept, but it was very innovative at the time, For those of you that have never heard of Francis Brannigan or Frank Brannigan, again, here's an opportunity. So Frank Brannigan wrote in 1971, published through the NFPA, the first edition, and the first printing was in November of 1971, Building Construction for the Fire Service, a Fire Officer's Guide. And again, it was all about understanding this aspects of construction. And again, there's just a lot of wealth of information. That first book, we talk about the first edition going back, again, over 52 years, 1971, 287 pages. Again, it's a relatively small formatted book, but sometimes even that book, as well as all the way up through and inclusive of the most current editions, when we talk about the most recent edition, the fifth edition of Building Construction, or what it's referred to now as Brannigan's Building Construction for the Fire Service book. It's Frank Brannigan did pass away a number of years ago, and his legacy lives on through the continued efforts of Glenn Corbett. And Glenn Corbett, the former fire chief, he's a professor at John Jay College in New York City. And again, and also he's the technical editor. I don't want to remiss this. I'm just, again, going back through a couple of notes here. But again, he continues to be a technical editor and contributor to Fire Engineering Magazine. We talk about, again, providing good, accurate content and supporting, continuing to support the many different layers of integrating both building sciences, fire protection engineering, construction, fire ground operations, and so forth from that standpoint. So again, Glenn's contribution, Glenn Corbett's contribution as a professional engineer, as a former fire chief, as a fire protection engineer to, again, accurate, timely information. He continues to support those efforts through the publication and the efforts of keeping Brannigan's Building Construction for the Fire Service book still alive in those efforts going forward. So that has been, and again, continues to be some of the leading books out there. I'm going to talk about some of the other books and so forth here in a moment. But again, when we talk about construction, right, it's overwhelming. It's overtly simplified and filtered because, again, if I talk about building construction guides, it ends up getting reverted back to about, 12 to 14 chapters, about 400 pages, or everything from the sound bites of a 2 to 12-hour training session, maybe 24 pages of some insights coming out of any time, anywhere from our Firefighter 1001, FPA Firefighter 1001, 1021 Fire Officer Training, and so forth. It gets diluted down to such a simplistic standpoint. We talk about the five fundamental types of building construction. We talk about the occupancy classifications. We give a little bit of insights on type 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 construction, but not nearly anywhere near enough in terms of technical insights and information, because the textbooks cannot withstand the amount of information and content or the pages that have to be dedicated to cover the subject adequately. And unfortunately, again, they follow the FESCI model. When we talk about specifics dealing with what's put into place, they follow the FESCI model for these textbooks to be applied to the college setting that is part of either the associates or the baccalaureate degree programs, but typically within the associates program, to provide a basic framework of an introduction to building construction for the fire service within the context of a single semester, 3-credit-hour class, in which the content of these books typically aligns to that type of format, and that's pretty much, we're in the starting gate, we finish the class, and that's where it ends, right? I would venture to say this. I'll ask you guys a sort of rhetorical question. How many of you have had adequate training on construction? And I'll ask this, to what degree? How many hours? How many classes? How many other secondary and tertiary classes, primary classes that are fire service related, tactical related, fire protection engineering related, architectural engineering? I mean, there's a wealth of these coexisting and classes that really are integrated together. But again, we typically overtly simplify it. We filter out the information. Sometimes we disregard it. We ignore it, or gets diluted down into these sound bites. And these sound bites, unfortunately, create what I call grammar school level knowledge that many of us have, right? And again, I'm not being disrespectful to you, but for many of you, that's all you get, right? You've gotten these classes, if you've gotten that at all. For many of you, you've gotten what you've gotten through recruit school, through probationary school. Maybe you've gone on as part of your ability to become a recruit, probationary firefighter, have completed at least your associate's degree, or are coming in with additional advanced level academic training and knowledge, and have had a little bit more. But unfortunately, the American Fire Service, for the most part, volunteer and career, has had very minimal formal training within the topical areas, and unfortunately, it terminated once they've gone out of the recruit classes, or what little they have gotten as part of in-service, formal in-service training, or in-service drills that any one of you are getting is not nearly enough. Again, we are finding that the American Fire Service is at a grammar school level of knowledge, where in fact we need to have graduate school level of knowledge, skills, abilities, and insights that are cohesively and integrated into a level of skill set that can be implemented on today's fire ground. And that's what gets into it. When we talk about some of these aspects, I'm really referring back to this concept of fire ground architecture. It's really integrating and looking at our built environments, integrating architecture, engineering, building sciences, fire protection engineering, strategy and tactics, fire behavior. It's putting them all together. We have a dependent professional degree of disciplines, both in architectural engineering, and we talk about building sciences, construction, fire protection engineering. There's consistencies. There's a lot of stability there. But at the same time, there's such a rapid degree of evolution, especially on building sciences as construction changes. It is sometimes changing at such a rapid standpoint, even architects and builders, contractors, are trying to keep up through continuing education and knowledge to understand what it is that the newest materials are coming out. The vendors typically, when I worked as an architect, again, we would typically have product vendors that would come about, make appointments or stop, make cold stop-ins and look to talk to the project architects, and we'd have a visit. Sometimes you had the informality or the formality of presentations, but they're showing us the most newest advancement of a method or a material, and all of it is to try to promote and really sell that product, sell that system, that process to you as an architect that would utilize that in the building process when we were designing our building. So many of you don't realize, and many of you do know, that I did work as an architect. I went to school, became an architect, went to architectural school, started my fire service career in the volunteer setting well over 40-plus years ago. So my formality, both as an architect, practicing architect, also studying architecture for my entire career, but quickly putting that together and integrating that as I became a volunteer firefighter, and then all through my entire career, as I moved and escalated into different positions, both on the career, the volunteer, the industrial, the variety of different elements that all interrelated, both in terms of architecture, fire protection engineering, academia in terms of being an instructor, and then also as a researcher, and then as an applicator. We talk about putting all these things into the strategy and tactics of command and operations in the streets, fighting fires, but having a certainly different perspective on the built environment. So when we take a look at all of those elements there, it really gets us to the standpoint we have to have critical, there's critical interdependence, an interdependency of what architecture can provide, engineering, building sciences, and fire protection engineering. These are not recognized on the fire ground or within the fire service, and that's what this concept of fire ground architecture is all about. It is really advancing the study of building construction into a different platform and plateau that integrates far more from all of the other ancillary and interrelated areas, but has continuity, has consistencies, and has an application. In other words, it's strategy, it's tactics, it's construction, it's engineering, it's sciences. It's putting all these things together in a far greater degree of integration than the individual textbooks have provided for, and more so to say, expanding upon opportunities that the classroom is falling short of not providing us. And especially, maybe it provides us, again, at a firefighter level or as a newly minted fire officer. And if you've never had a formal class in construction, then again, you're taking your first college class as part of your associate's degree program or as part of your baccalaureate program. Again, it's typically a fundamentally required class to take, building construction, but it falls short. I have yet to see, and we are attempting to promote this at the college level, but promoting some advanced level studies relative to this fireground architectural concept to, again, put together some things to increase both building and fire literacy, stop having these excuses, and, again, the failure of the fire service profession to embrace, to advocate, and to demand an increase in knowledge, skills, and abilities of what we need to have on today's fireground, in particular, of our fire officers, and especially with our commanding officers. And unfortunately, being involved with NIOSH as a subject matter expert, as a technical reviewer of NIOSH reports and incidences, far too often we continue to see the lack of skill sets, knowledge, technical knowledge, capabilities, proficiencies that commanders and company officers are in need of that many times are contributors toward those events. One of the leading issues that came out of the root cause analysis that the University of Georgia did when they did a deep dive into the reasons, the root cause analysis of line of duty deaths and looking at the NIOSH reports. One of the root causes was the inability, and I'm going to paraphrase this, is the inability for commanding officers or commanders, and again, it's sort of incident commanders, commanding officers, those that were in charge, those that had authority, whether it be at the divisional level or at the command operational levels, it was the inability for commanders to identify adverse events before they were apparent and act upon them. So the inability to identify potential adverse events and act upon those potential adverse events, the adverse condition occurred. Building collapse, fire behavioral related issues, just understanding building performance. Those inadequacies, unfortunately, are contributors and leading back into these particular events. And again, I'm so often to hear that, again, I don't want to get into it, I don't study construction, it's too technical, too much time, and we really see this degree of being functionally illiterate. And that's the best way to describe it. And again, we coined it a while ago, and we've talked about it nationally, and you would be surprised at the degree of illiteracy that continues to be out there. But stop and think. We are functionally illiterate. We know enough to get by. We know enough to size up the building. We identify some different elements. We know enough sometimes to do what not to do, but not nearly enough. And that's what functional illiteracy is when we talk about being literate, truly having literacy, understanding, being able to read the building, being able to read the fire ground, being able to read the fire, read the compartment, being able to read our companies. Those are my four reads on today's evolving and demanding fire ground. There are four specific areas that we have to have this degree of literacy, comprehension, and critical thinking. It's, again, reading the fire ground, it's reading the building, it's reading the fire or the compartment. I term it in terms of the compartment, and it's the most closely related to, for many of you that understand the writings and the lessons that have come out of Chief Dotson's reading smoke. It's along that same concept, and it revolves around three fundamental aspects when we talk about fireground architecture. And those three fundamental aspects are the building. Those are fundamental when we talk about integrating from an operational standpoint, but it's all about the building. It's all about understanding the compartment, however large or small, or the multiple compartments or individual compartment in a singular standpoint that compromises a particular occupancy that is part of a building, that is part of a fire ground in terms of its footprint there. And it ultimately has everything to do with the human performance. And many of you may be starting to hear about human performance and the dynamics of personnel performance. There's a couple of different groups that are taking some of the military's connotation and aspects of human performance and are introducing that into the fire service. It is, and it follows and aligns with much of what we talk about near-miss reporting, where the IAFC continues to advocate and stress in terms of near-miss reporting. It has everything to do with the performance, the capabilities, the limitations, both the pluses and the negatives of the company. And that ultimately revolves and reverts back to the team and typically ends up falling on the shoulders of that single resource individual. So it's the individual that's part of the team. It's the team that's part of the company. It's the company that's part of the alarm assignment. It's part of the tactical box. And it is the orchestration of those resources on the fire ground that comprises our alarm assignment or subsequent greater degrees of resources that come in that have either consistent or variables dealing with human performance. They relate back to the fire ground, relate back to our strategy and tactics, our operations, as well as the building's predictability performance. That is really sort of it in a particular nutshell. So I'll say this, that, again, when we talk about building construction, maybe the first time you've heard this, again, it's from building construction, is that building construction is as fundamental to structural firefighting as water is to fire suppression. That's where we've got to gird ourselves. We need to understand that that building construction is as fundamental to what we're doing on the job, in the streets, within our buildings on fire, that are part of our structural fire ground assignment and our responsibilities and the kinds of demands and priorities that are there. It's as fundamental to structural firefighting as water is so fundamental and so important to fire suppression. If we can grasp that concept, then we will certainly be much further along. When we talk about this in the context of fireground architecture and even becoming the fireground architect, and we'll leave that for another session and another discussion point, but we've really got to get ourselves, especially, and I'm talking now to company and commanding officers, you've got to become that fireground architect. You need to have this degree of knowledge and insights that has to be fine-tuned, that has to have this continuous level of learning and insight and fine-tuning and revisiting sometimes new stuff, revisiting old stuff to maintain that tactical edge. The challenge, again, for today's incident commanders and our operating companies on their modern fire ground is to clearly recognize building performance factors and inherent construction characteristics that are fundamental to the manner in which a building's anatomy, and we're talking about the building structural conditions and so forth, and fire conditions. When we talk about the building's physical construction methods and materials and fire dynamics, so again, we talk about building, we talk about compartment, we're talking about fire, we talk about those two elements. When those characteristics present themselves at an evolving incident, and we are able to, again, at the command level, at the company or command level, that we're able to ascertain and to distinguish how it will subsequently perform during, again, fire duress and under the tactical window of operations. So as an incident, we have this tactical window of operations. We have this elapsed time on the fire ground. We need to be monitoring all of those aspects of the building, of our companies, and of the fire ground, and to be able to recognize building performance factors and fire ground factors that are going to influence subsequent performance. And by performance, meaning our company-level performance, how and when and what we conduct ourselves, what we do at particular time frames, but we've got to have this level of understanding of the building. And again, when we talk about it, it's the adverse effects. When we talk about fire, fire is affecting the structural anatomy of the building. It's affecting the integrity. The least thing that can happen is a compromise. The worst thing we have happen is a collapse. And when we have a catastrophic collapse versus an isolated compromising condition, it makes all the difference between something that's survivable, something that's fatal, that leads to singular or multiple firefighter fatalities. again, when we put this into the context of what we are trying to premise of fire ground architecture, again, we are all looking at trying to instill and develop skill sets, again, that revolve around some of the most challenging aspects. And again, predicting a potential structural collapse or just monitoring building predictability performance while it's being impacted by fire is one of the most challenging tasks facing an incident commander or company officer at a fire scene. And again, usually the lack of information on the construction of the building, the fire size, fire location, the fire burn time, the conditions of the building, the fuel load packages, et cetera, all of these things makes the task nearly impossible. However, and I say this with a strong emphasis, however, key building considerations and fireground indicators, when presented, when recognized, and identified for their relevance and their importance to the operational safety, can dramatically influence operations and decision-making. So that is really sort of the crest of all of these particular elements. And again, when we take a look at the company and the commanding officers, it's pretty simple. You know, and again, this is how it comes together. We want to be and are firefighters. Talk about our company officers, our company or our incident operational commanders, tacticians, strategists, leaders, right? We're also risk managers, safety managers, compliance officers. We also have to expand it into and inclusive of being engineers, architects. We're also scientists, behavioralists, statisticians, again, predictability, probability factors, leaders, mentors, instructors, educators, and going back to firefighters. The job of firefighting continue to demand the placement of personnel into inherently dangerous situations within the confines of a building, whether you are in, around, on top, next to, underneath. We are working in an integrated standpoint in and around a building. That will never go away. But our degree of understanding has to increase dramatically to get to that standpoint. And unfortunately, much of what we have when we talk about our built environment, they are tactical-driven operations. It's related fundamentally back to building construction type and tactics. It's occupancy type tactics that everything that is in any one of our textbooks that has been currently read or any of the literature that's currently out there, it all falls under what I call tactical driven operations, both in terms of occupancy type driven tactics, fire driven tactics, tactical driven operations, procedural driven operations. And again, sometimes the aspects of the dynamics on the fire ground are not recognized, and we are an autopilot. And you've heard me talk about some of these aspects of, again, utilizing an adaptive fire ground management model. That's another whole element that integrates into this concept in modeling when we talk about fire ground. So, again, when we talk about those elements, again, when we talk about fire ground operational, mission critical role of the building in an adverse event environment, embracing and again, almost in institutionalizing the importance of a building relative to the adversity of what we deal with when we talk about building or structural fires. Again, it's an understanding of the building, the compartment, and the company. It's an expansion of what we have continued to advocate when we talk about the five-star command model. And I'll talk about that here in a moment when we come back from our break. We're going to take a break here in a quick moment here just to allow you that are listening live to, again, get another cup of coffee. I'm going to do the same. We're going to take about a five-minute break, so there'll be some static air here. I'll play actually one commercial here, but we'll take about a five-minute break here. There'll be some static, and then we'll reconvene, and we'll continue on in the second half of our program. But I'll talk about, again, the aspects of fireground architecture revolve around five fundamental aspects of all buildings. If we can understand that, we can have a greater degree of understanding of how to study our buildings. I'll also talk a little bit about, again, where did the five fundamental classifications of our buildings come from. We utilize it, right? It's in our textbooks. It's in our NFPA 1001 series, 1021. It's in our FESHI classes and in any one of our classes, whether we talk about the National Fire Academies, the NFAs, 12-hour classes that have been around for the last 40-plus years, guys. We talk about the two fundamental classes that the majority of the fire service continues to utilize, and that is, again, building constructions 1 and 2. The first class, 12-hour NFA class, that was handed off. It's available online as part of a self-study. It's also part of the continuing programs that are being provided in the outreach program. It's wood frame and ordinary construction, and then the second part, which is on non-combustible and fire-resistant construction. 40-plus years since those were published, and again, I worked on those, both of those programs back in 1980, 81, published in 1982, 1983, when I was involved at the NFA. And again, having worked with Frank Brannigan, who was part of the leadership team, these are outdated. They are outdated. They still provide a fundamental building block, but they are outdated in terms of what the current context of information is in need of. Even that first edition of Brannigan's book, 1971, we talk about 50-plus years, about 287 pages. The second edition, which was probably the, again, those that first and second edition I believe was probably the most well put together book. It expanded. It was published in 1982, about 380 plus pages, about 100 pages extra. But fundamentally, that that second edition really gave us what we needed to instill upon. The most current edition, fifth edition, published in 2015, another about 100 plus pages, about 450 pages of content. But again, guys, when we talk about building construction, we talk about types of construction, types 1 through 5, it is so much more than that, and I will talk about that here in a few moments. So we're going to get into some different aspects here. We're going to talk about, again, I've talked about this tactical edge, the four building reads, reading the fire ground, reading the building, reading the compartment, which is also, again, part of reading smoke and fire behavior, and then reading the company. Those are so critical when we talk about manifesting our operations. They all revolve around time-determinant aspects, building occupancy risk and not occupancy type, fire severity and urgency and the prioritization of the fire ground, optimizing what we can either presume or know from building intel of a building in terms of optimizing that based upon the tactical windows that a particular building and its occupancy type and occupancy risk along with its fire ground characteristics regarding its footprint, its physical nature of the building, its era and vintage, and how that ultimately will influence the fire ground decision making process. So we're going to take about a 5-minute break here. Let me just calibrate my Eastern Standard Time. I'm showing just about 20:37 right now. We're going to reconvene at 20:45 in about 8 minutes from now. So we're going to listen to a quick commercial break. There's going to be about 5 minutes of static airtime here. I don't have anything to play in between that. I'm going to take a quick break. So again, you can do the same, and we're going to reconvene in 5 minutes for part two of Buildings on Fires, Taking It to the Streets, talking about fire ground architecture, the importance of construction, literacy on today's demanding fire ground. I'm your host, Chris Naum, on Buildings on Fire, Taking the Streets. We are live. We will also take some call-ins maybe at the top of the hour, about 15 or so minutes into our next segment. So if you're listening in and you've got some questions on something or just like to add to something, we'll certainly take some phone calls from any of our listeners. So we're going to take a 5-minute break. I'm going to queue up our short little promo here. So bear with me for a quick minute. And we'll be back at in about 8 minutes at the 20:45 minute hour.
Looking for timely information and insights to support today's fire service demands? FireGroundLeadership.com provides outstanding e-media offerings across a broad range of topics that include lessons from the fireground, building construction and fire dynamics, adaptive fire ground management, tactical discipline, and much more. FireGroundLeadership.com, operational excellence on today's evolving fire ground. A BuildingsOnFire.com series, now on Penwell's Fire EMS blog, a part of the FireEngineering.com, Firefighter Nation, Fire Rescue Magazine, eMedia Services. TheFireOfficer.com is highly regarded and recognized as the premier e-media site for information and insights for leadership, knowledge, and training for today's fire service. Focusing on the emerging and practicing fire officer and field commander, TheFireOfficer.com is dedicated to providing in-depth insights on leadership, operation, the modern fireground, and professional development with over 22 additional fields of dedicated e-media support. TheFireOfficer.com, a BuildingsOnFire.com series now on Penwell's Fire EMS blog, a part of the FireEngineering.com, Firefighter Nation, and Fire Rescue Magazine e-media services. Taking it to the streets is all about advancing firefighter safety and operational integrity for the fire service through provocative insights and dynamic discussions dedicated to both the art and science of firefighting and the traditions of the fire service. The focus at Taking It to the Street continues to be straightforward street-level talk with intelligent, stimulating, and provocative insights and dynamic discussion with interactive dialogue and, most importantly, listener participation. Just like around the kitchen table or in the day room over a cup of coffee at 02:30 after a good run. And now, the latest edition of Taking It to the Streets with your host, Christopher Nall.
Welcome back, everyone, to Buildings on Fire, Taking the Streets. I'm your host, Christopher Naum. This is our session, part two session on fireground architecture, the importance of construction literacy on today's fireground, perspectives on the study of building construction, building sciences, and introducing to you, as our part one segment was, talking about the introduction to fireground architectural modeling. So, again, we had a very extensive conversation, although one-sided. I'm doing all the talking, obviously. But certainly some insights from my perspective on a variety of different elements here, trying to paint the picture of what and how we need to move forward here as we start approaching the midterm of the 2020s. We're moving into 2023. We have some opportunities for check and adjustments. We're coming on the heels of some new insights that have come about, a new standard, the NFPA 1700 standard, if you're not familiar with it. Research it up, look it up. ISFSI is doing some phenomenal offerings regarding fire dynamics, along with a cadre out of both UL, ISFSI, and a number of other of us that are doing independent programs nationally. I've rolled out a new program that actually was piloted last year. We had an opportunity to do a couple of different presentations talking about the influence of building construction, occupancy risk, and the insights from research and development on command and company-level decision-making. So there's a lot to be stated right there, but it's all about the influence of building construction, the influence of our built environment, and the insights that's being derived and coming out of occupancy changes, hybrid construction, and the insights coming out of fire dynamic research, fire dynamics, and the research derived from there and how they are truly influencing fire dynamics. So we're all moving forward, trying to connect some dots, paint the pictures, and again, advocating a different change in fundamentally what we've been doing successfully, rather successfully, for the last 75 plus years. But again, it takes much more than just luck. It takes much more than just brute physical effort, although at the end of the day, that's what it does allot it to us to do some of the things that we used to take for granted or that need to be done. The tactical windows continue to get smaller and smaller in terms of the opportunity to conduct operations accordingly on the fireground. That's why we need to be doing them smarter with a greater degree of insights, knowledge, skills, and abilities, and have a greater appreciation for how these buildings are built, a greater appreciation and a greater degree of knowledge. Not just appreciation, but we need to have the technical skill sets to understand how these buildings' predictability will perform under fire conditions in order to save the lives of the civilians and the occupants and the users of these buildings that we are sworn to protect. And if you don't know it, you are derelict at best, and you shouldn't be functioning on the fire ground. It's as simple and as straightforward as that. All right, I need another sip of coffee. I'll just do a check and adjust. A lot of words that came out of that. But again, you guys understand, if you are not learning, if you are not studying, if you're not taking an opportunity, either online, physically in the streets, mentally engaged in some degree of refinement or attaining new insights about building construction and fire dynamics each and every day, eventually you will get to the, you will be complacent, and the complacency may lead to adverse events. You're just not going to be able to put it all together when it may need to be needed most, when those conditions present themselves on the fire ground. I talked a little bit about the continuing complacency or the lack of understanding of why we're not moving forward. Why can't we move the ball forward? Why can we not break out of this paradigm of what we do know about the built environment? And again, I want to talk about some aspects here. I'm going to sort of ramble on a little bit. So on our first program, or our first segment, part one, we talked about Brannigan's Building Construction for the Fire Service, first edition, 1971. We talked about the formative expansion of that textbook from 1971, 1982, so about 11 years. Second edition really became a significant foundation in the developing fire service in the 1980s, and I consider the 1980s the modernization of the fire service. We saw the standards being developed. We saw significant changes in technology, methods, materials, the kinds of tools that we had, methodologies and practices were refined. Just the introduction and the institutionalization of self-contained breathing apparatus, the introduction of Chief Alan Brunicini's Fire Ground Command, a concept in modeling sectors, divisions. I mean, all of these different aspects, the NFPA 1500 standard. In the midst of all of that, Brannigan's Building Construction for the Fire Service book, second edition, was first and formative to much of what we were studying, talking about, implementing. I was a student of the fire service at that time. I had been in since 75, but again, company officer in the 1980s. It was critical. It was very, very critical. And I think upon that book, I take a look at some of the other textbooks that came out at that particular time frame, especially we get back into even the early 1990s and so forth. Again, John Norman's Fire Officer's Handbook on Strategy and Tactics. The fundamentals of some of these books and some of the studies and insights that were derived out of them, even the entire NFPA series, the 1001, the Firefighter's Handbook of Firefighting. We talk about the introduction of the 1021 standard, but again, they all sometimes fell short. Other books that came about at that time frame, we talk about construction, The Collapse of Burning Buildings, A Guide to Fire Ground Safety by Chief Vinnie Dunn, The Collapse of Burning Buildings, second edition, A Guide to Firefighter Safety and Operations, Building Construction for the Fire Service. Again, as these editions, from the second to the third to the fourth to the fifth editions, Mike Smith's book on building construction methods and materials for the fire service, again, was written, came out. The ISTA book on building construction, what am I thinking of here? Knowing Your Buildings, a firefighter's reference guide, was another critical book, although sort of soft-sold. It's really, it's a second going into the third edition by, trying to think of the author now, and again, it escapes me, unfortunately, all the way up to the current books. You know, we talk about Turpak's book on fire ground, Size Up. We talk about Middendorf and Dotson's book, The Art of Reading Buildings. Again, that, again, was built upon some of the concepts of era and vintage and methodologies and practices, how to categorize buildings that we first introduced, again, in 1999 and really started talking about through our writings, our blog sites, in the mid-2000s and really became a basis of what Dotson and Middendorf went on to expand upon in The Art of Reading Buildings. We actually even talked about the concept of reading buildings as early as 2004 in the time frame. Again, online, our original writings on era and vintage on the CommandSafety.com website really started influencing many within the fire service to start rethinking fire ground considerations, and again, was one of the first concepts that became what we now are talking about when we talk about the aspects of fire ground architecture and this fundamentals, the fundamentals of how do I study a building. And that's really part of this whole conversation here. I made mention earlier on that even some of the earliest textbooks and going into the college, again, whether it be the academic two-year program for the associates or the baccalaureate program, all of the current, whether it be online or formal in-class type settings, face-to-face, we talk about the fundamental introduction of building construction program, all the way from the basics of a 12-hour National Fire Academy class, 12-hour, they were face-to-face, they were part of a weekend delivery, two-day delivery, they now are both the handoff as well as online versions, but they all fall short. And as I mentioned in part one of our program, the other challenges to all of this is that there is not anywhere near enough time allocated for the study of construction as it relates to its importance and its integration in the decision-making process. Talk about strategy and tactics. It has everything to do with the building. It has everything to do with the compartment and the fire condition. It has everything to do with the company, so it's three fundamental elements. So let's go back to, so all of these current textbooks, all of our current publications, all of our current literature that is out there revolve around and discuss five basic principles when we talk about building classifications and type. And that is derived from the NFPA 220 standard, 220 standard. They are also embedded in the most recent editions and versions over the last 15 years. Over the last 20 years, actually, for as long as those codes have been out, but the International Building and Building Code and International Fire Code from the International Code Council. So when we talk about building classifications, building type classifications are formalized by and defined by what is present within the NFPA 220 standard. It's important to grasp and have an understanding of that. But we also have to understand that the occupancy types and classifications are also derived from the standardization of our codes, and those more often than not are derived from the NFPA 1, NFPA 101, Life Safety Standards. So NFPA 1, NFPA 101, and the NFPA 5000 standards. But with that being said, all of this is influenced by early building fire protection, life safety, and codes that go all the way back to the National Board of Fire Underwriters in the turn of the last century. Those things that were developed in the late 1800s and in the early 1900s when the first establishment of fire codes and the formalization of firefighting practices and the National Building Code in 1900 and in 1915, well over 100 plus years ago. Everything that we do today was influenced by those things that were set into motion based upon the buildings and based upon the built environment in that era and vintage. And it's important to understand that. We also have to understand the evolution and changes over time. We talk about buildings and occupancies, especially we talk about methods and materials and the things that go into the buildings and how fire dynamics affects our structures. So we need to have an appreciation. Now, I don't want to get into a deep dive on building codes, but and I've made mention of this in a couple of other programs last year. I think two of our sessions in the fall of 2022 provide a little bit more expanded items, and if you go back into the archives, you can actually find some of the insights and a little bit more information on that. But the fire codes and the evolution of the codes has everything to do with that basis and the expanding risk and the dynamics of the fire ground that, again, if we don't understand them and we don't have an appreciation for it, we have a dysfunction and sometimes an inadequate decision-making model that may not give us the correct outcome of what we expect to happen in the fire ground because our decision-making model is faulted, because our understanding of the building is faulted or is inaccurate, or we predicted or we assumed some things without some degree of functional knowledge, and that's where we get into. So the fire codes are all really evolve around this time frame of around the years from 1867 to current. and there's an importance when we talk about 1867, especially when we talk about it in the aspects of immigration and the first tenement building act and so forth. So I just quickly, I want to give you a couple of quick insights, a couple of notes here. So fire codes over the decades, the changes and so forth, the International Fire Code, the International Building Code, the International Fire Code, the International Code Council, the Uniform Building Code, the Uniform Fire Code, the National Fire Protection Association and its various standards, the BOCA Code, National Building Code, the Standard Code, which was the Southern Building Code, and also, again, the influence of the National Fire Incident Reporting System. All of these things have relevancy. All of these things had impacts. I made mention of the NFPA 1 code. Again, the NFPA 1 is the NFPA Fire Code. NFPA 101 is the Life Safety Code. The NFPA 220 standard is the standard on the type of building construction. The NFPA 241 standard, I'm just going to throw this in only because we continue to see this adverse issue dealing with construction site challenges and construction site fires, but it is the standard on safeguarding construction, alterations, and demolition. Another important item I'll just throw out, the NFPA 251 standard on methods of test of fire resistiveness of building construction and materials. And I only say that because, just put this in the back of your mind, I'm going to talk about this concept of building RIT, and that building RIT has everything to do with its resistiveness and its integrity. So I'm just going to give you that little snippet to think about. The NFPA 1620 standard, which is going to be revised here on pre-incident planning, and I made mention of the NFPA 1700, the guide. This is not a standard, but it's a guide for structural firefighting, science-based research. So it's integrating what we are learning from science-based research, and its influence on firefighting. So, again, both UL has a separate program. A couple of guys are out there doing some good things on the side of that, along with our good friends at ISFSI that have put together an integrated two-day program that's available. And it's actually scheduled out for a number of different regional deliveries around the United States. Go to the ISFSI website, and you'll find some information on those offerings. And then lastly, the NFPA 5000 standard, which is the building construction and life safety standards. So just some insights on those particular aspects. So at the end of the day, it's like, okay, so what, right? All right, so you've given me all these different things. What does it all mean? Well, I'll tell you this, is that the NFPA 220 standard, the NFPA 220 standard is where we find the terminology, the definitions of what type 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 construction is and are. This has everything to do with the tactical-driven building construction tactical-driven operations. I made mention of this early on in part 1. Type 1, type 2, type 3, type 4, type 5. I've got fire-resistant, non-combustible. I've got a particular building type. Sometimes we use those in our nomenclature for our size-up. I've got a fire-resistive multiple occupancy. I've got a non-fireproof multiple occupancy, X number of floors, fire on showing on a particular floor, and I go to work. Our strategy, our tactics, our operations, our protocols, our SOPs, SOGs, everything that we've experienced in the past is all based upon those elements. They're precursors that we have, again, imprinted and developed a particular tactical template in our minds, which is good to a certain extent, of what we're going to do, how we're going to stretch the line, where we're going to position the apparatus, where fire potentially may travel. But what happens when that building is a hybrid structure that's not built in the 1950s or the 1960s, and it was built last year in 2022, and is comprised of a variety of different methods and materials of construction in which fire dynamics is being presumed to building in a certain way that gives us a certain tactical window, and we commit personnel up on top of the roof, we commit personnel inside the structure, and then within a very short tactical window of operations on the fire ground, we have adverse conditions that are now impacting us and maybe impacting us to an extent where it's unrecoverable. And we've got to understand those things, and that's the premise of these particular elements. So let me go back to give you at least the foundation on the NFPA 220 standard. The NFPA 220 standard on building types was first drafted in 1952, first issued in 1954, talking about 71 years, 16 editions later. this has everything to do with the relevancy. So it gave us our types 1 through 5 construction. It gave us what all of our strategy and tactical books, as well as our building construction book, that I'm looking over my shoulder here in our office, I'm looking at all 5 editions of Brannigan's book set that I have in my personal library, and it has everything to do with what's been written and how we execute and try to train and formally understand our buildings. But if I talk about wood frame construction for type 5, this is where this concept of what we call BEAR, the acronym of BEAR, with era and vintage. So it's the building, it's the era, it's the building's anatomy, and it's the building's resistancy. But it has everything to do with what we consider and what we have defined to be era and vintage. So I can have a building of type 5 construction. Wood, and all it is, it's referred to as wood construction. It has certain features and certain different aspects to it upon considerations for exterior bearing walls, interior bearing walls, columns, beams, girders, trusses, arches, floor support, floor construction, roof construction, exterior bearing walls, non-bearing wall construction. So when we take a look at the standard, it has everything to do with the degree of resistance. And that resistance goes back to the standard we talked about in terms of fire resistance of components, of materials, of systems. Well, what does that mean to us? Well, it goes well beyond life safety. It goes back to how will that building perform under the duress of fire ground impingement or fire travel or the effects of impingement in terms of the deterioration or the movement of loads. The deterioration of material, meaning the burn through, or the burning effect of the material, is the thermal effect of the material, as well as the aspects of the load aspects of that building. So again, it's not just the traditional aspects of live and dead loads. It's also about the fire load. It's also about the occupancy load of that particular building, and it's about the resistancy, the integrity, and the time factor. So this is where the importance of that comes together, and we expand upon that. So going back to the type 5 construction. Type 5 construction in the late 1800s could have been beam and plank construction. It could have been brace frame construction. If I get into the 1930s and 1940s, it could be balloon frame construction, right? Type 5. But I get into the 1960s, it's conventional construction of a nominal nature. I move into the 80s, 90s, or 2000, it's lightweight engineered systems that although nominal in construction configuration, it's a different type of engineered material, entirely different than what we call lightweight construction from the 80s versus lightweight construction in the era of the 2000s. So everything we talk about in terms of engineered materials, it really truly is engineered wood framing systems in the 2000s versus the first generation of lightweight wood construction in the 1980s, entirely different. So again, I want to introduce you to that concept and that consideration. The other aspect, that era and vintage that falls under the fireground architecture model, is that all buildings undergo, the longer they stay up, however short or however the lengthy of their existence, have a life cycle. We have buildings that in some jurisdictions, again, I can go here in the Northeast, I can go into some areas of Boston and New York, and I've got buildings that still exist that were built in the earliest colonial days of the 1600s, in the earliest days of the 1600s that still exist. Now, they have been modified. They continue to go through a life cycle, but they have some inherent construction. They were built by a certain method of material construction and so forth. But we take a look at our buildings from, let's say, the 1800s, which are more common. We talk about our buildings of type 3, brick and joist construction. I'll give you this, primarily the kinds of things that implemented and impacted our codes from, again, 1867, around that time frame, and I'll make reference of why 1867 is important all the way to current. Some of the major periods of time in which building life cycles were impacted relative to this era and vintage, the mid-1920s, the introduction and the expansive use of and the building renovations and modifications due to the introduction of electricity. In the late 1880s and early 1890s, we saw some changes in our buildings. And again, if you go back to, and I made mention of this, to the Matt Letourneau line of duty death in Philadelphia from 2018, if you read that report, we gave a whole bunch of insights. And again, much of what went into that aspect was that in that row house, in that entire division within the city, there were a significant modification made to every single one of those row houses in that 1880-1890 period when they introduced cast iron and gas service to the buildings that had no service prior to that. So in that late 1890 period, we actually saw the first stages of the introduction modifications throughout the entire eastern seaboard and the east coast and going inward with the introduction of gas services to occupancies that had no utilities in them prior to that. In the early 1920s, we saw the introduction of electricity. The 1930s were affected by the Depression, the post-Depression era, and coming out of the Depression, we saw buildings that had been vacant, that had not been utilized, being renovated and changes. Post-World War II, in the late 1940s, saw the same change based upon the war ending and a whole degree of activities dealing with construction, occupancies, and construction and growth. The late 1950s was a modernization era. The mid-1960s was another modernization era due to the impact and influence of the space race and technology and so forth. But by the late 1960s, urban decay and other issues started, again, affecting our buildings that existed and, if again, affected changes in the buildings. The energy crisis. The energy crisis in the 1973 to 1976 era really started changing a lot. We started introducing more voids in the buildings, especially in buildings of Main Street construction, Type 3, Type 4 construction, the significant height of floor areas, floor to ceiling, floor to floor to underside of floor joists up above. We saw more and more introduction of concealed spaces due to the inability to economically air condition or heat large volume spaces. So again, we saw the energy crisis as a result of that change buildings. The urban renewal of the late early 1980s, conservation efforts of the 1990s, and then again the whole adaptive revitalization efforts that are going on, and that's been going on for the last 12 to 13 years, started really taking hold nationally around 2010. So these all influence changes into our building, influence era and vintage, and have such a dramatic influence on, again, the importance of sizing up and looking at our buildings from that particular standpoint, era and vintage, and as such. So it's important to understand that when we look at those particular aspects, and I made mention of the 1867 era. So in 1867, the Tenement Housing Act came into play. Chicago Fire occurred in 1871. The Old Law Tenement Act was introduced in 1879. The New Law Tenement Act in 1901, and the introduction of the first and National Building Code, 1905, and then the real formal introduction and the National Code, which occurred in 1915. Those in themselves, and a lot of other things that were going on from a construction standpoint in the late 1800s, the formalization of the professional groups such as the International Association of Fire Chiefs, the NFPA, the introduction of some of the initial concepts of building codes, again, as a result of the National Board of Fire Underwriters, they were so significant in taking a look at this massive destruction of cities, conflagrations, loss of life, major historical events where significant civilian fatalities occurred. These all led to construction changes, along with the introduction of construction methodologies and practices as construction engineering were changing. These things all went hand in hand. What we identified, again, back in the late 1990s, as I was starting to teach and really doing a lot more building construction classes, both at the local, regional, state level, at the community college level, and even into the national level. Again, through this independent research and putting some things together, understanding, again, the history of architecture, engineering, and starting to take those separate, what was always considered to be separate aspects, and overlaying them and recognizing that this concept of era and vintage, construction, materials, what was introduced, how buildings were being built, all had a relevancy based upon how certain things were being developed from the fire service standpoint. And I'll explain a little bit of that when I talk about the next piece of this. We talk about how building construction has been captured over the last 100 years, actually from about the late 1920s till here we are now in 2023, almost 100 years later. And again, it's a form, a significant basis of this concept here that I'm introducing. So there's a number of other benchmarks that are pretty essential here when we talk about that, but they are pretty critical. So here's the rub, guys, is that the National Board of Fire Underwriters and the first National Building Code, all of our buildings that were being developed in this era, that 50-year period from around early 1900s to around the mid-1950s when we established what we now know and how we currently classify building construction, did not match up to how we classified and how buildings were built. So if I talk about a building of ordinary construction, type 3 construction, even though it may have been in the late 1800s, early 1900s, it was not classified as type 3 in that time frame, nor did it fall under the same characteristics that type 3 construction was captured in any one of the 16 editions of the NFPA 220 standard. Ordinary construction in the first National Building Code was considered type 2 construction or class 2. It was considered non-fireproof construction, of which there were two subtypes. The first subtype was ordinary construction, and the second subtype was mill construction. So again, type 3 construction did not exist in that time frame. And then so we had three classifications. We had class or type 1, which is called frame construction, typically of wood framing. We had non-fireproof construction, of which we had ordinary and mill construction, typically dealing with, again, masonry and timber, wood products. And then the third classification, just waiting for the mic drop, class 3 or type 3 is called fireproof construction. And that was the evolving type of construction dealing with cast iron, introduction of structural steel at that time frame, the initial movement of low-rise and high-rise construction and everything that moved forward. So I just want to paint the picture and give you some insights that there's so much more to all of this than meets the eye, and what we are attempting to do is create this different consideration and repackaging. And again, tying this into some things that are very predictable. We talk about building construction, firefighting tactics and operations. And we've even gone so far to create, again, a series of classifications in the era and vintage. So construction, everything we talk about revolves around the building, talks about the compartment in terms of where fire is going to be, the three critical components that are part of the basis of the architectural fire ground architectural model deals with, again, building, compartment, where the fire is going to be located, and the company dealing with human performance. The building relates back to predictability performance, which relates back to the acronym of BEAR, B-E-A-R. I'll explain a little bit further on that. The compartment and the relationship of the compartment, meaning the room, however large, however small, however many in terms of quantity, what its location may be above ground. Is it a singular compartment? But again, all compartments have a characteristic, have a consideration of volume, square footages, size, orientation, placement in terms of its siting on the fire ground, and other related aspects. Is it open? Is it closed? But again, they all revolve around the fire within that compartment, resiliency, integrity, and we start throwing in and introducing the aspects of time. Time relative to fire impingement, fire exposure, fire intensity that affects buildings' predictability, performance, so it goes back to the building aspects. But that time is also related back to strategy and tactics and tactical windows. And then the third element relates back to the company in terms of the knowledge, skills, and abilities, and the human performance capabilities, the limitations capabilities. Is that company operating at an optimum level? Is there limitations? Is it staffed at a 2, 3, 4, 5-person staffing? What is the composition? What is the capabilities? Is there an adequacy of companies based upon the variable of knowledge, skills, and abilities, human performance, or is there a consistency? That consistency or that variable plays out in the decision-making process. And then the other aspect, actually the fourth element of that, relates back to the time. Now, the time has everything to do with tactical windows based upon the resilience, the integrity of the compartment. Gets back into the whole connection of fire dynamics on the fire ground. So the building's anatomy, the whole aspects of fire ground architecture, they are what we call the ABCs of construction, the anatomy of building construction, is a systems approach toward understanding buildings, understanding construction, and understanding those particular elements. And fundamentally, it revolves around some basic aspects. It revolves around the building's anatomy. And again, it's understanding the structural support system. Do we have structural and non-structural related aspects of support and integrity? Are there structural loads, both live and dead loads? Are there primary? Are there secondary types of loads? Are there aesthetic types of conditions that are designed in the building? The building's footprint, when we talk about reading the building, the floor plan, is it open, is it closed, compartments, access, egress, connectivity, square foot, cubic foot, volume, along with the fire load, along with the occupancy load. So, you know, we talk about structural loads, we talk about live and dead loads, well, it's also the fire load gauge and the occupancy load. And then again, we talk about the siting, we talk about reading the fire ground, it's the site footprint. What is the siting? What is the orientation? What is the proximity? Then we start talking about exposures and other particular related aspects to that and from it. When we talk about the building, so even just in terms of fundamentally, so we try to simplify the concept of the building. When we take a look at the building, there are five fundamental aspects that all buildings, so we could argue, we can get into all this discussion about all these different features of a building, but I'm telling you guys, fundamentally, these are the five aspects that are fundamental to all buildings, however old or new, however large or small, whether it be a high-rise or super tall or mega tall, or it's a small one- or two-story brick and joist of 1,000 square feet, or that Cape Cod, or that California bungalow, or that log cabin. It's all about the enclosure and the compartmentation of that building. It is all about the roof system, the perimeter walls, the floor and or ceiling system, whether it be one or two or multiple stories, but it's the floor ceiling system which are combined. It is the characteristics of the compartment, and it's the absence or presence of void. Five fundamentals. So roof system, perimeter walls, floor and or ceiling system. It is the compartment's characteristics, and it's the absence or presence of voids. And voids are so critical as they relate to fire travel, fire propagation, and impact on fire ground operations. So it's just a little bit of consideration from that standpoint. The other aspects is that when we talk about the five fundamental aspects of all buildings, well, let me start off by this. So when we talk about building anatomy, it starts off with a component. A component may be, I'll just use this as an example, is a brick. Well, the brick is a component. Well, when you take that brick component and put them together, we have an assembly. That assembly could be a party wall. It could be a structural bearing wall, as an example. So that's part of the assembly. When I put that wall in conjunction with a floor component, which is constructed with other components, it's part of an assembly, now we have a system. It can be part of that perimeter wall and floor system that is part of the compartment. And again, it's both internal and external. So these are the fundamentals when we take a look at those particular features for our buildings. Now, I also talked about fundamentally the study of our buildings revolves around what we've always called, what we've went on to present as far as being the acronym of BEAR. And the acronym of BEAR revolves around building/vintage, building anatomy, and building risk. And that's what the acronym of BEAR. When we talk about the building, it is the predictability of its performance. If I was to give you any building in a particular era and vintage of time based upon its structural anatomy, meaning its structural systems, we could discuss the predictability of performance under fire for that compartment that are inherent or that have been adaptive and placed into that based upon this life cycle of the building. They are all predictable. It's just a matter of knowing the roadmap of what to look at, what to assume with a high degree of reliability of how that is going to relate to the decision-making process. Era and vintage are all defined by decades or periods of construction time. They have everything to do when we're related to architectural and engineering practices that came about historically. There are things that were developed in different eras of time, whether it be handmade bricks, then the movement from handmade bricks to machine-made bricks, from timber construction to cast iron to structural steel, from masonry construction utilizing something as simple as lime mortar mixture to Portland cement to reinforced concrete to high-stress concrete to pre-stress to precast, from heavy timber to brace framing to something like balloon frame construction to Western platform frame construction to lightweight construction to engineered construction to the newest type of Type 4 mass timber construction to mass timber ply scrapers. Again, it continues to evolve relative to all those particular elements. So when we take a look, it's ultimately this all revolves back to the aspects of two other elements here. The other acronym of the BEAR deals with anatomy, and that is part of our five-star command model that we've been sort of promoting for the last 20 years. All buildings, so think about this. The study of buildings, the study of construction, can be simplified to five fundamental aspects of all buildings and all occupancies. And that relates back to the construction anatomy or construction systems of the building. What is being utilized to form the construction of the building? It goes back to, again, perimeter walls, roof systems, compartment, floor systems, and the voided conditions. So it is the construction systems. It is the occupancy use and occupancy risks associated with how that building is occupied. So what is the occupancy use? There's a whole series of subsets and bullets that come out of that. So it's not just occupancy type, but it's also occupancy risks that are associated with the building. Out of everything on the fire ground, critical elements from a operational perspective, when we talk about strategy, tactics, operational considerations, is how much time, again, we talk about the tactical windows. All buildings, when I'm looking at a building, I have to be concerned about what is the integrity of that building relative to two distinctive features of that building. And they relate back to its characteristics as well as its susceptibility or resistance to compromise and or collapse. So think about it. Again, the least thing is compromise, and that compromise may be everything from non-existent to just an isolated, limited condition that is recoverable, all the way to an inclusive of catastrophic collapse of an entire floor or catastrophic failure of the entire building. And then stop and think about when I talk about characteristics of how the building was built and what a compromising collapse may be when we talk about successive collapses, entire collapses of multiple floors of a building. And it doesn't take a lot to think about that aspect. Buildings, based upon era and vintage, have different methods and materials of construction. The use of different materials, that again relates back to the construction system, and the methods of construction, how that building was built. And they all relate back to era and vintage. The way buildings were built in the late 1800s, the way the buildings were built in the early 1900s, post-World War II, the early 60s and 70s, the modern era of the 1980s, and I utilize actually a distinction between first-generation and second-generation lightweight construction. So introduction, so the kinds of lightweight construction present, both wood and non-combustible, from the 1980s to around 2000, and then 2000 till current. There's dramatically different methods and materials that go into our buildings, that in terms of material usage and how they were constructed and the materials utilized. And then the fifth element is the fire dynamics. That's all related back to, again, the structure and the compartment relative to how will that building, how will that fire affect the compartment, how will it affect the floor, how will it affect the perimeter walls, the roof, the compartment, and the absence or presence of voids. So when it all gets said and done, the study of the basis of fire ground architecture revolves around the first step of this is, again, understanding the aspects of these five fundamental pieces that, again, get built upon these other aspects of these acronyms that have a basis that revolve around tactical windows, that revolve around considerations for the study of, as well as the operational aspects. So I can actually utilize the size of considerations of those five features in my size of considerations on the fire ground. So again, there's much more to these aspects here without getting into too much more discussion, which really, again, just based upon our limitations, time, and so forth, but they really form a significant basis of what we're trying to introduce here and what we've been talking about here over the last 2 hours now. So both in terms of part one and then as we've been discussing in part two. I think the only other aspect, so I talked about tactical windows. I'll just throw this out. Some of you may be asking, you know, what's a tactical window? So some of you may have a 20-minute rule. Some of you may have a 15-minute rule. Some of you may have a 10-minute rule. Some of you may have no rules in terms of fire ground, tactical windows, or benchmarking. Sometimes we misnome and we misalign PARs with tactical windows, and I don't want to get into further aspects of that, but it's entirely a separate aspect. We talk about PARs and regarding to benchmark. Benchmarks and PARs are separate and individual, although they have and they share a particular aspect of a criticality of time, expansive time on the fire ground. But again, best practices, we talk about benchmarking is 10-minute elapsed time from time of arrival of the fire ground. I'll leave some of that for another point of discussion. But the only other thing I want to make mention of here briefly before it, in order to wrap it up, and then I'll ask for any remaining calls here as we get into the wrap-up session, but I just want to connect one other dot here in terms of buildings and their relationship to tactics in particular, especially with size up. Some of us have no understanding of where the concept of size up and sizing up and reading the building and this aspect of construction. So it used to be tactical-driven operations are, I show up on scene, I identify building type, identify occupancy type, I identify fire location, I go to work. That is pretty much tactical-driven operations. We are very good at it. It's the fundamentals of what we've been doing for many, many decades, and I'm talking about decades really that go all the way back, let's say, to the post-World War II era, from the early late 40s, early 50s, when we started really fine-tuning tactics. But again, if I really start looking at the late 50s, so the 1960s were very formulative regarding our strategy and tactics based upon a couple of key books that were written. I want to give you some insights on that as we wrap up discussion. So when we talk about size up, we talk about fire ground, we talk about buildings, there were some criticalities here that came about through the introduction and publication of a couple of key books. So if you've never heard of these books before, this is the first time you're hearing about them. Some of them are still available online. Some of them are very costly when you try to find them. But if you have the opportunity to go to the National Fire Academy, go to the Resource Library, these books exist in that great resource tool. Pull them off the shelf, sit down, take a look at them, make some photocopies. If you're able to buy them for your libraries, whatever point in your career you're at, I mean, I look at my library, my personal library, and all of these books, as well as many, many other books that are present, are there that I obtained in the past when I first got on the job, and I continue to expand upon my professional library each and every day as those opportunities present themselves, both in terms of fire service and non-fire service-related books. And I will leave you with a nugget of one definitive book that each and every one of you should have on your bookshelf, and that is a non-fire service-related book that it continues to get more promotion and advocacy as more and more guys become familiar with it. But it was only up until the last few years that some of us started talking about it, and you literally we struck the match and lit the fuse. And again, as more and more people become introduced to it, I know that we really had a major influence in getting that word out many, many years ago, because it was one of the first books I was exposed to in my second semester as a student in the architectural degree program. Really, there was two definitive books that really put everything together for me back in the day, and I'll give you some insights. One was, again, Brannigan's book on building construction, but the second book in 1975 is just as important today as it was back in the day. So real quickly here, let me just see what I've got here for my notes. So I just want to talk about connecting some dots on the building as it related back to construction. So one of the first insights that came about was introduced in one of the most earliest books, earliest books that was published, and that was by FDNY Fire Chief John, and that book was called Fires and Firefighters. It was very influential. Kenlin became fire chief. He was the chief that followed after the very notable fire chief Ed Croker. So many of us know Ed Croker and you know, the whole aspect of what it meant to be a firefighter and so forth. John Kenlin was appointed chief on August 1st of 1911, wrote this book in 1913. He followed in the steps of the very formative chief FDNY, Edward Croker. So Kenlin formed the first fire college in New York City, the first formative fire college to learn about fighting fire and having formal classroom sessions to learn about firefighting. He wrote this book, and that book ended up directly influencing, later on, the writings of Lloyd Lehman. Lloyd Lehman is important for the fire service because he was what? He was the father of the indirect attack and the father of the fog stream application. So his writings in 1943 were directly influenced by this book in 1913. The other notable item is sort of a side note, and one of those nice-to-know things is that John Kenlin fought the first high-rise fire, and that was the Equitable Life Fire in New York City in 1912. 170-foot high-rise building fire, so it was considered the first high-rise fire that he fought as the chief fire officer. It wasn't until 1932, through the IAFC, the International Association of Fire Chiefs, and the publication of the Fire Chief's Handbook. This was and is considered the first complete textbook for the fire service. And this was written published in 1932. Fred Shepard was the author, sort of the editor and author of it. It began compilation in 1928 and really put into motion many things that we have taken for granted. We talk about the duty of the fire department, right? We talk about life safety. We talk about the public coming first. Well, I will give you this tidbit of insight that nobody else seems to have picked up upon, and I've talked about this extensively over the last 2 years, and we were sort of the first to really convey this. But again, I'll read this quote-unquote. Talk about life safety and saving a life. The first duty of the fire department at fires, again, is the saving of life, and that was primarily focused on the civilians. But again, they also talk about that the saving of life may delay the use of fire streams. This is actually quotes out of the book. But they also went on to state this, and this is where the rub upon many who continue to utilize rhetorical kind of internet BS that goes on. They say this: the same appraisal of life holds in the of members of the fire department. So primarily they, meaning the fire service, in the blue-collar era of the 1930s, that we continue to sometimes dismiss and say it was all about one group versus another, the fire service in that first definitive book talked about the value of the life of a firefighter and the value of the life of a civilian. Now, they did not weigh one over the other. Although, again, we clearly understand that. I take that back. They clearly understood that the mission and the job of the fire service was to save civilians' life. That's what our oath is all about. But they just talk about the same appraisal of life holds in the case of members of the fire department. So, again, they understood that there was a value toward doing the right thing at the right time for the right reasons, and just a lot of other nuggets that are in there that get into it. So there's a lot of different things they started talking about. The importance of the initial plan of operations. Based upon the first-in officer rests the heaviest responsibilities. They were the first to start talking about and correlating the importance of construction, the development of fire, the types of construction characteristics based upon that first National Building Code of the 1915 era, and they were the first to talk about size up relative to building height, construction, the amount of windows and openings, the fire location, the occupancy, the exposures, both internal and external, and guess what? The next thing is it just blew my mind when I first read about it. They also talked about the importance of wind as it related to fire operations, wind-driven conditions. So if you want to talk about science in the streets, guys, it occurred in 1832 based upon what was the emerging era of science and research and looking at developing strategy and tactics. They talked about wind considerations in 1932, accessibility, resources. And again, they also talked about this, scientifically and carefully fought fires. That is actually the words that are utilized out of that book. And they talk about extinguish quickly, confine to the smallest area, go to directly to the seat of the fire by interior means when possible. This was the definitive genesis of interior firefighting operations. And it even gets more in-depth because they also, in that book, promoted opening up the building. The term opening up the structure in terms of ventilation, that term was coined and that phrase was first utilized in 1932 in that Fire Chief's Handbook. And they were promoting the concept of ventilating and opening up the building. Prior to this, the public opinion within the fire service is that it was considered a poor practice to ventilate the building. So just some quick little insights on that. I'm just looking at where we're at relative to our particular episode, and we have quite a bit more to discuss about sort of the evolution of and further promoting this aspect of the building, just talking about some other books and insights, and even so going so far to talk about the OTA loop that Colonel John Boyd, we actually have been talking about this for quite a number of years, of observe, orient, decide, and act. We actually have that tied into some of our first new building considerations as part of our first arriving building facts model. So everything that we've talked about here thus far, both in part one and two, revolve around first arriving facts. And again, it's another important fundamental building block of fire ground architecture, and that is that when we talk about the first arriving tactical window, building facts or command facts, it's first arriving, construction, tactics, and safety. So that acronym, again, of giving us the facts is very, very important to understand, comprehend, and then ultimately integrate and implement into our operations. I'm also going to publicize here at this point is that in the next few months you're going to be seeing a new resource tool that we're going to be publishing. We're hoping to work with Fire Engineering and with our good friends here at Fire Engineering, as well as some things that we're going to be promoting on our websites. And that is going to be, and we're not quite sure what the actual term may be. It's either going to be Buildings on Fire Facts, FATCS, or Command Facts. And it's going to be a couple of page PDF, critical and tying in with a particular building era, vintage, occupancy type, construction, with tips relative to first arriving construction, tactics, and safety. What to do in that first 10 minutes of operation relative to those critical elements that tie in everything that we're talking about relative to a fire ground architecture. So it's going to be the tips, it's going to be the tools, it's going to be the insights to help give you some of the potential insights to help you decide what you need to do, at least considerations, to increase your knowledge, skills, and ability on the fire ground. So that's going to be coming up here in the next few months, and some things that will be part of a subscription program and some other things that will be part of a free-based subscription. Just sign up, and we're going to start doing email blasts that will make these things available on some undetermined frequency. Sometimes it may be daily, weekly, monthly, and or something else. But as quickly as we can produce them, again, we're going to get some good information out. So I think we're going to end it at this particular standpoint. Some of the things that we're going to talk about, I think, in our next program, we'll talk about the 15 points of size up, the original Red Book series from ISTA. We'll continue to talk about Lloyd Lehman's Fundamentals of Firefighting, Firefighting Tactics, Attacking, Extinguishing Interior Fires, the second edition of the Fire Chief's Handbook from 1960, Firefighting Strategy and Leadership by Charles Walsh in 1963, Fire Attack 1 and 2 by Warren Kimball in 66 and 67, the Fire Chief's Handbook, third edition, came out in 67, Fire Attack 2 in 1968, Building Construction for the Fire Service in 1971, Firefighting 1972, Effective Fire Company Command by James O. Page in 73, Firefighting Principles and Practices by William Clark in 74, and it just continues on. Strategy and Tactics and Leadership by Walsh and Marks, Essentials of Firefighting, the first edition in 78, Fire Command in 85, Collapse of Burning Buildings in 1988, John Norman's Tactics book in 1991, The Blue Card System, Brunacine in 2001, The Rules of Engagement 2001, Reading Our Buildings concept that we initiated and developed in 2001, Fireground Strategies by Anthony Avillo in 2002, Fireground Size Up by Mike Turpak in 2002, our Building Facts Model of 2006, The Slicer Concept 2014, Mittendorf's Reading Buildings in 2015, and so forth. So some additional items and insights that I think we're going to put into our next episode. Our next episode, for you guys that are keeping track, our podcast in February, it will be on February 23rd, 7:30 p.m. live here on fireengineering.com, Blog Talk Radio. For those of you that are out there listening and are either in Missouri, we're going to be at the Winter Fire School at the Missouri University the first week of February. I'll be down at the Flora Fire Chiefs Conference in about 2 weeks, the middle part of February in Daytona, doing a couple of classes on fireground leadership, operations, mega mansion, strategy tactics, some influence on building construction. So there's about four programs we're going to be doing at the Florida Fire Chiefs Conference in the middle part of April. Escape in West Virginia, for those of you that are familiar with that. Four programs at the Escape Conference in Pipestem, West Virginia, the end of February. And then a couple of things going on. Our New York City tour on March 11th. If you're looking to take an exceptional hands-on tour, looking and reading, building, understanding construction, join Danny Sheraton and I on March 11th. And again, go online. Please register early. We had a lot of people that registered and wanted to register the day of, the day before, or the week of, and we ended up postponing that class due to low enrollment. Had we known and had we waited 24 hours, we would have had about 50 or 60 people for that class. So I'm going to be at the California Fresno's Fire Conference the middle part of March, doing about four programs there. State of Nebraska in Gearing, the Scotts Bluff area, doing a leadership conference program for a full day in March. So a bunch of things coming up, and we're looking forward to, as well as FDIC in April. I'll be doing a class at FDIC along with a Reading the Buildings tour. We'll be posting a bunch of stuff on Reading the Buildings online. We're doing a class on Thursday of that week at FDIC, along with a Buildings on Fire tour and some other things. So a lot of things coming up. We've got quite a few classes lined up here for podcasts here on Fire Engineering, blogtalkradio.com. Please keep an eye out for our premier Buildings on Fire Fireground Architectural webinar series. We're going to be rolling out some programs. They are going to be 3 to 6 modules each quarter, starting up in a couple of weeks. Some topics are going to include the anatomy of building construction, just talking about structural systems, reading the building, methods of materials, characteristics of compromise, fire dynamics. We've got a 6-part series coming up on Main Street, old school hazards for today's fireground, four-part series, again, webinar-based series, online, six different programs, and that'll be in the second quarter going from April through June. We're going to talk about the building anatomy of wood structures, a whole variety of different elements within the third quarter, talking about non-combustible construction in the fourth quarter of this year. Again, a very robust series. And then we've got a couple of other independent webinar programs. Actually, later this month, we're going to be doing a separate program on tactical risk for the first due, a Main Street program. We're going to talk about reading the buildings. And we have a brand new program on row house insights that ties into some of the insights and learnings out of a number of different high-profile fires and, again, some other things there. So for those of you that, again, continue to follow our podcast here on fireengineering.com, again, my appreciation for your continued support and those downloads. I always look forward to meeting guys out and about the United States as I'm presenting, and they talk about, and again, it's very, very humbling to hear the comments, and I thank you for taking time out and that these programs do influence and help you to become a better firefighter, become a better fire officer, and certainly a more effective incident commander in whatever roles and responsibilities you may have. However new to the fire service you may be, or however long on the job you have been, there are opportunities and efforts. And again, just take a look at our previous archived programs. Take a look at our other opportunities that continue to dovetail in to what we have been afforded and the opportunities that we are always very appreciative of for our good friends here at Clarion and FireEngineering.com, Fire Engineering Magazine, and certainly the legacy that was built on all of this from Bobby Hall. And again, all of us owe a wealth of gratitude to Chief Hall for his friendship, camaraderie, the brotherhood, insights, conversations that we've had, his leadership, and his words of wisdom that always seem to permeate in the formal as well as the informal conversations, whether it be from the main stage of FDIC to the hallways of obscure locations across the United States when we had the opportunity to cross paths and we were on mutual agendas, or in passing at an airport. One of the greatest little side note conversations I had with him, and we were texting while we were both flying on separate planes in different directions, both landing at the same time within 15 minutes of each other at an airport, and we were both online using the internet, and we said, hey, well, I'm going to be at this location, and I waited for him at the gate. We had a chance to talk a little bit, and it was always so great, and I got a picture to show for it, and it was just some nice nuggets. So just remember, again, Chief Halton, always extend a prayer for his families, for his family, and the entire fire service in our loss and in the days, weeks, months, and years ahead. Continue to be better tomorrow than you were today, and take advantage of the wealth of resources that are available here on fireengineering.com, on the website, on the academy, in Fire Engineering Magazine, the instructors, the faculty at FDIC, the authors of the books that are out there. There's just a lot of great information to make use of. I'm just going to stay on for a couple more minutes. If anyone is out there that's listening live, if you want to make a quick call in, I mean, I've got time left on the show here to allow us to have a little bit of a conversation or just listen to what you may have to say. So if you want to do a quick call in, I'm at the guest call-in number is at area code 760-454-8852. So again, it's 760-454-8852. If you have any comments, like to pass along any information, any questions on the program thus far, or anything that you may want to add to our end conversation here as we close out our program. Like I say, I'll stay online for a couple more minutes. We've got about a 30-minute window remaining to our program here that's allotted to us here on the platform. And if not, again, I want to thank all of you for listening in on our two-part series. This is one of our more involving programs. I hope you, in the absence of any of our guests, normally we will have somebody that will show up and get online to get into the conversation. We hope to have a little bit more of that conversation on our next episode in February. But this is what our programming is all about. It's all about, again, not just talking about BS and getting into stuff, just hard factual information, really pushing the envelope and trying to provide a resource and a method and a practice for improving and giving us that tactical edge on the far ground to make us better at that next alarm, that next job, and to try to operate and do what needs to be done, all in the interest of the civilians that may be in harm's way or may be in distress. And at the same time, trying to keep ourselves out of harm's way and really trying to go home, get back off the shift, back off the call to our loved ones, which is challenging at best on today's fire ground. So without any additional callers coming in, I'm going to end our session here. I want to thank all of you, again, for taking time out of your schedule. And, again, I'll just say this as I always do. Again, until next time, companies are in quarters and off the air. Stay safe. Keep in mind there's a job being worked somewhere in the streets, in your city, across the country, and around the world, doing what we do best and being who we are, and that's firefighters. So take care, everyone. Stay safe, and we'll see you on the next episode of Buildings on Fire, Taking It to the Streets, or at one of the many conferences that is upcoming over the next couple of months. Stay safe. Good night. Take care.